You're listening to the Drawing the Ideal Self podcast for May 2023. In today's episode, we are going to think about the client's expectations of their counselling sessions. So I know that not all of you in the audience will be counsellors. I think this also applies to therapists, and it may well apply to people who are meeting people for assessment as well. So I hope it will be more widely useful. I think it's interesting how little attention is sometimes paid to this area and not explored. So why would I, as if I'm a counsellor, not explore what it is a client wants to get out of their sessions, or what they expect of me and of the way things might run? If I don't explore that, I might go along in a way that doesn't suit them at all, or even frightens them if it's too unexpected. So you've got to think here about what Kelly said about anticipation being a key to feeling comfortable with things. And when we can't anticipate what's going to be happening, we will feel very uncomfortable. That's a normal reaction. If we feel intensely uncomfortable, you could get to the point that people leave the sessions. So the key bit is about how we help people. Now, I was looking for some nice resources for this and found something in Personal Construct Psychology, Counselling in Action, and that's by Francella and Dalton. It's a nice little book, and it covers a number of areas of personal construct psychology counselling. The blurb on the back says, Faye Francella and Peggy Dalton outline the key principles which underpin the PCP counselling approach. They show how the starting point of counselling is a careful exploration of the ways in which the client construes his or her problems through credulous listening to all the client says and does not say. They describe and illustrate the range of methods which can be used to help the counsellor and client learn about these constructions and their implications, including self-characterizations and repertory grid technique. The book goes on to show how the counsellor and client in partnership can then devise experiments for change, through which the client can try out new and more rewarding ways of construing and acting. A number of approaches to facilitating change are discussed and exemplified. The book includes a detailed case study of the counselling process with one particular client. I think that's quite an interesting thing to include such a variety of case material so that you can really get a feel for how sessions might go. Anyway, going back to my part that I've picked out here, it's about the client's expectations of counselling, and this is what they have to say about that. As any experienced counsellor knows, there are a number of expectations a client may arrive with. These need to be discovered if the counsellor is to establish a good working relationship. Of course, it is not necessary for the counsellor to share the client's construction of counselling, but it is important to know what these expectations are in order to be able to subsume them and so decide whether or not she thinks she will be able to help this client. So they go on to talk about the positions a client might take and their constructions of what counselling could be about. The first one is, it's all about the problem. This client will not want the counsellor to deviate from the treatment of the symptom. He may well be working within the medical model, which says that if you have a symptom, you go and get yourself treated for it. This client will not be happy if the counsellor starts too early on talking about dreams. Now, they're not suggesting here that you should be talking about dreams, but what they're picking up is that some people will come with an expectation that by attending their counselling sessions, that in itself is the treatment of their symptoms. It might be quite an approach which does not engage them so much and relies more heavily on the counsellor to do the work for them or with them and do all the facilitating and making sure they're okay. Now, on one level, that is what they're going to get because that's the relationship. But nobody can make progress in counselling unless they are willing to look at things and actually do some work themselves. So if somebody comes and it's really more about the treatment and they're maybe thinking from a medical model, for instance, if they want help with anxiety, they might not relish the thought of talking about work where they don't feel any anxiety, they say. Whereas I might think that talking about work is very important in terms of understanding that person and who they they are and how they function. And remember, Kelly points out that we need to look for exceptions. Times when the symptoms are not occurring are just as useful as the times when they are. So we explore both. The second one they suggest is everybody's doing it. Some see counselling as an end in itself. As Kelly has said, if you have a problem, you go and lie down to be treated for it, rather than seeing it as something you try to solve yourself. So a person who is approaching and anticipating using a construct like that might not expect that they're going to have to do very much in their sessions. They may be waiting for it to happen to them. If you then give them a task to do as a sort of homework task very early in the process, you may find that they drop out of your sessions because they didn't anticipate that they would have to be doing something, you know, quite active themselves. The next one is counselling makes you better. This is a view held mainly by those who do not have incapacitating problems, but are focusing more on self-development, perhaps as self-actualisation. So somehow counselling will improve you, and what people who might be construing it in this way may be expecting is that they will be able to somehow evaluate the amount of progress they've made, perhaps with you as a counsellor as opposed to the next person as a counsellor, or in comparison to their friends as a counsellor. And they may not be looking for something which is deep and meaningful, but they may be looking to address surface problems. So it could be organising themselves differently or choosing what group of friends to spend more time with, something like that. Next, they talk about counselling under ether. Some clients come wanting to be relieved of their problems by some form of magic, that is, without their having to do anything themselves. Quite often, what they are really looking for is something like hypnosis, the discovery that counselling can be both painful and exceedingly hard work. May lead them to give up before any real help has been felt. If you think that you're unlikely to disabuse this client of the expectation of some magic, it may well be the best to refer him for hypnosis with the proviso that you will be glad to see him again should he so wish. At no point should the client be made to feel rejected. So a client like that might be expecting there's some kind of magical process, and maybe not so much hypnosis now. Perhaps they're expecting EMDR or something like that. And if you're not going to offer what they're looking for in terms of something which is a bit different, there are many alternative therapies that you could go for, then you might find that they don't make the progress that they came looking for because they were expecting it to be somehow different or more, or maybe a bit wacky or a bit alternative, and you might not be able to fulfill their expectations. And what they're saying here is it's better if you get a sort of idea of that to make sure that that's addressed by making the offer to pass them on to somebody else, or give them the suggestion of websites where they can find somebody else, and there are plenty of those around now. Next, they talk about people who are looking for support for the problem. Sometimes this takes the form of providing proof that they are sick and therefore cannot be expected to live a normal life. Sometimes it can be used as a punishment of parents or spouses. Look what a mess you have made of me. I have to have treatment. This can be particularly punishing when the parents or spouse is or are paying for the counselling. So here it's somebody who is drawing attention to the problem much more than seeking solutions. And they may be perhaps going through the motions of counselling and moving forward, but what they're expecting is counselling to be showing other people how ill they are in some kind of way, or how dysfunctional they've become because of something that's happened to them. Now, PCP would not be really the best kind of therapy for somebody like that, because it will require of people to look at themselves and look at other people and how they construe the world. It isn't at all a passive process. The next one they pick up is seeking counselling itself initiates change. For some clients, the decision to seek psychological help with a problem has far-reaching implications. These clients may seem to change very rapidly, but it will not be as a result of counselling, but rather that the change was all designed and ready to happen, and the counselling provided was the context in which it could occur. If you are a counsellor, it's great to work with people who do change, and often that isn't the case. We might have very small changes, but occasionally you meet somebody who makes very big changes, and it works quite quickly, and it seems to be like a dream as a counsellor or therapist that, you know, they came at the right moment for them. Perhaps the right moment for them has meant that they have done some thinking about it in advance. They have an idea of where they want to get to, and what you're doing as providing counselling sessions is providing them with a means to get there. You know, so they might know their destination, but you're helping them along the road. Next, they talk about clarification of problems. Some clients take a seemingly sophisticated view of counselling, that it is something that can help sort out specific problems. This does not necessarily mean that these problems are straightforward or easy to deal with, but just that clarification is all the client needs. If, on the other hand, the client insists on seeing the problem more to do with others' behaviour than their own, counselling is not likely to get far unless the client can come to own the problem themselves. I think this is a particularly important one when you're working with people who are referred without their proper consent. So they might be young people, for instance, or people who feel an obligation to do what is suggested to them. And in that case, they may be hoping that other people are going to change, and they don't see the problem as located within themselves or the way they see the world or anything like that. If they don't think they have a problem, there isn't really going to be any point seeing them because they aren't coming as customers. So this one often applies to children and young people who don't refer themselves for help. Somebody will decide that they need that help and make the referral for them. Not in every single case, but usually. And in that case, counselling sessions are unlikely to work if the person does not see themselves as having a problem in the first place, or as having a problem that they have any sense of ownership of. So, you know, it might be that they don't own the whole thing, but they own part of it. And then at least you've got something to work with. But if they've been referred, say, for having a problem with their temper, and as far as they're concerned, they don't have a problem with their temper, it's other people who are too mean to them and always picking on them, that's going to be quite tricky to address. So you would want, first of all, to do a piece of work in your early sessions to explore whether or not they are actually a customer. Or have they come to you because they've been sent, or have they come to you seeking some help with a problem that they can see that they have? And finally, they talk about the ultimate state of passivity. Some clients seem to decide to come for counselling as a last resort. They see it as destructive of their personal integrity and therefore cast themselves in the role of helpless patient. They are literally being patient. Their posture is one of helplessness and despair. So they might turn up at the sessions and cry for the whole time and be unable to tell you what the problem is, or feel that they can't even make sense of what's been happening to them and explain it to you. And they go on to say, none of these expectations on the part of the client presents the counsellor with special problems. None is good or bad. A client is no more and no less than what she is. As in all aspects of personal construct counselling, the counsellor's job is to subsume, get inside, the client's construing system, to spot ways in which the client may be able to get himself on the move again, the answers to the questions, why have you come to see me, and how do you think I might be able to help you, will help in this understanding process. So Francella and Dalton go on to talk about meeting a client for the first time, and they give a really nice example. So I'm going to read that section. So the client's name is Trixabel. Trixabel is on time. I, Faye, have been idly wondering why her parents gave her this unusual name and what other children had made of it at school, and indeed what she has made of it. Trixabel is 35 years old, smartly dressed as befits a career woman who has some success in the banking business. Her hair is brushed softly so as to frame her face. She is taller than I am, about 5'10", and she talks in a lively, bright, high-pitched way. We arrange ourselves comfortably on our chairs. Since I want her to feel free to look away from me with ease, I prefer the chairs not to be facing each other. I find about 90 degrees quite comfortable, and as I want to be sure I can catch as many of her changes of expression as possible, I like to have her chair facing more towards the window or the light than mine does. When we shook hands, Trixabelle's had been moist, so I start out with the idea that she is under some stress and may be experiencing some anxiety at this meeting. Most people do, so that is not a very profound observation in itself, but from a personal construct perspective, it has specific meaning. She may be finding it difficult to make much sense of the situation and may be at a loss when it comes to predicting what will happen. She can make no predictions and so has no guidelines for behaving. Such is Kelly's definition of anxiety. Stress is a more complex idea and is bound up with the notion of threat. We are threatened when we're aware that if our interpretations of a situation are correct, we will be facing comprehensive change in some important aspects of how we construe ourselves. Stress is the awareness that threat is possible. A not unlikely prediction if Trixabelle thinks the counselling may work. So I behave towards her as if my hypothesis were correct. That is, that Trixabelle is, to some extent at least, at a loss to know how to behave in relation to me and the situation generally, and that she has some feeling that the counselling she may decide to undergo will enable her to change. That may be what she would like to happen, but change can be an awesome prospect nonetheless. I therefore do my best to give the occasion some structure. I take out a pencil and some paper, and I ask some routine questions, such as her address, telephone number, marital status, and so forth. This is by no means my standard practice, but is done in my response to how I perceive the needs of this client. I have begun to play a role in relation to her. I am relating my communication with Trixabelle to my understanding of how she is interpreting, construing our interaction. My strategy seems to be working. Her voice has dropped considerably, although she is still talking and filling in all intervals. I listen hard and I listen credulously. In these first minutes, or even sessions, my approach to the client is one of total belief and acceptance of everything she wants to tell me. It goes without saying that a client communicates both words and actions, and what the client tells is a combination of both. I am in the process of collecting impressions in these early stages, and any obvious inconsistency or untruth is just as much data about the client as all else. In order to listen credulously, I have to be able to put my own feelings, value systems, ideas to one side. They are suspended for the duration of the session. If they intrude into my listening, then they will come between me and my client. My only interest is in trying to follow, and so subsume, the pathways that the client currently uses to make sense of the world. This perspective enables the counsellor to be ever diligent, ever alert for times when their own construing of what the client is experiencing threatens to distort the client's experience. I accept my responsibility and obligation to Trixabelle as I listen to her talk about her mother, who is a pain in the neck, a martyr who is engulfed by self-pity. I am not the least concerned with whether or not her mother is actually a pain in the neck and a martyr, only in the fact that this is how she is seen by her daughter. Trixabelle describes her problem as failing to make long-lasting relationships with men. At one time, she was so desperate that she took an overdose, but was found and taken to hospital in time. She gives her suitors her genuine love, and she does her utmost to ensure the man of her choice responds likewise, but the relationship always flounders. She cannot understand why. Time is passing, and our session, 50 to 55 minutes, has only another 10 minutes or so to run. I have an uncomfortable feeling that I have been listening to a lot of words. but I really have a very cloudy picture about the world in which Trixie Belle lives. I stop her as gently as I am able during a long description of a married woman friend with whom she now has a really good relationship. I ask her, "What's going on now inside you?" There is quite a long pause before she answers. "I'm thinking about my friend as I tell you about her and how lucky she is to be happily married and to have two lovely children. That is not what I meant. She's given me thoughts and I was after feelings." "Yes, and can you tell me what you are feeling now, this very instant?" Pause is even longer. Her face falls, her eyes mist over, tears well up and flow slowly down her cheeks. "I am feeling how deeply I love David, my friend's son. I have so much love to give, and no one seems to want it." A thought crosses my mind that this sounds rather as if she is saying that the fault lies with others rather than herself. I do nothing with this thought. It just lies there until such a time when it can be checked out. At an initial session such as this, I make it a rule never to press for or explore issues which may well be very complex and require more time than we now have available, and also far more knowledge of the client than I have at present. Knowledge about the client, data, is very necessary before painful issues can be investigated. The counsellor must be aware of the potential dangers involved in such explorations, what threats and anxieties the client is possibly being asked to face. My question has provided the data I was looking for. I now have a sudden and clear glimpse of an aspect of Trixie Belle's world that was causing her a problem. Whether it was the problem is not important at this time. Our time together is coming to an end, and I need to be sure that Trixie Belle has tightened her system for construing the everyday world sufficiently for her to be able to deal with it efficiently when she leaves. Having found out that Trixie Belle can cope well with the world at an intellectual, factual level, I ask her to give me a picture of David, what he likes, where he is at school and so forth. We talk amicably like this for a few minutes. Her tears disappear almost immediately and she appears lively and smiling again. I now ask her whether there is anything she would like to ask me. She is interested to know about the personal construct approach. I talk along the lines that we were interested in the person's view of the world, in the here and now, and that we are only interested in the past if it appears important to the client. There is nothing inherently important in early childhood that means it should be explored with all clients. That we do not have any answers, that the client has the answers, but we do have some skills that enable us to help the client seek answers from within their own construing of the world. I stress that we consider there to be no absolute truths, since we all have our own unique ways of looking at the world. That this means we can all change our ways of dealing with the world, although it is by no means always easy. That we expect our clients to do a lot of work, including work between sessions. I also often make a point of stressing our view that most of the work is carried out by the client between sessions with the counsellor rather than at the sessions themselves. Since all behaviour is viewed as an experiment, the chances for experimentation are much greater between rather than within counselling sessions. The sessions are where the experiments are designed. If a client decides that the approach offers something they feel they may be able to use, I like to make a contract with the client about a number of sessions to which we will both be committed. The ways in which all these ideas are worded depend greatly on the client, but the message is the same. Trixie Belle decides she would like to explore her problem from the personal construct perspective, and we arrange to meet for 10 sessions in the first instance. I do not consider this will be enough, as I have already formed an initial opinion, hypothesis, that she is going to have to undertake some fairly radical reconstruing of her views of herself, mostly involving her relationship with her mother, much of which is probably pre-verbal, developed during childhood without words attached to the constructs. Our first task may be to persuade her that the problem may lie in the way she behaves to others, as well as how they behave to her. But we shall see. We plan to meet next week. During the coming week, Trixabelle is asked to write a self-characterisation. This is a portrait of the client written by her in the third person. There are virtually no rules about its length, content and so forth. Trixabelle now leaves. She appears much more relaxed than when she came, and the pressure behind her talking has disappeared. We both indicate that we are looking forward to meeting again in the coming week. I hope that you will think that that's quite a useful illustration of what might happen if you're using a personal construct psychology approach. That first session is really important because the person will come with their own ideas of what's going to happen. And the job of the counsellor is to hear what they've got to say about why they're there, but also to explain something of the approach. And I would always do something like that very early on. Even if I'm only seeing somebody once, I might explain that. It depends a bit, and it depends a bit what I'm supposed to be doing in that session, because it's not always therapy. But I think it's important that if you are going to see people, they have an idea of where you're coming from. So learning how to give a nice little description of PCP is quite important. And I thought that their description worked very well, actually. So it was well worth including here. So in summary, if you're offering counselling sessions to people, you've got to be thinking about what it is that people are expecting to get out of it. And why have they even turned up? And then, what are you going to do with them? And how are you going to explain that to them so that they can anticipate how things might go? And what Faye Francella did in that session is set up a kind of system of, okay, the work is going to happen for you outside this session, and you're going to come back and talk to me about it, so we'll discuss it. Now, I would not always do that at all. So for many of the people that I might see, I would not give them any homework in the slightest. And that's because I don't find that they do it. And I think that's maybe to do with working with children and young people, because they are sent for their therapy or counselling rather than have opted in truly. And also, they don't necessarily have the power to do any work you give them. You know, they can't say to their parents, oh, I haven't got time to have my tea now. I need to do this self-characterisation. You know, that's not going to work very well. So I tend not to give out any homework. Occasionally, I would, but it just depends. So you need to think about who it is you're working with, what they're coming for, and how you're going to relate to them and show them what PCP can be like. And remembering that it's your version of PCP. You know, we have a theory. You will use that theory in your own personal way, and you will have your preferred style of how you will run your sessions. And that's okay, because it's not a limiting kind of theory. So maybe if you think about this before your next session, as your first session with a client, it might be helpful to ask them, you know, what they're hoping to get out of it. I often ask people what's their take on something or what's their theory about it. It's if I see a parent who's concerned about their child, we'll talk about what happens with their behaviour, which is the thing they want to change. And I'll say, you know, what's your take? How do you think this has happened? Has it always been there? Did it suddenly start? You know, what's your theory about how come this stuff is happening now? And I think that's interesting, because people can only answer from their own construing. If they say they're just like their dad, and I know that their dad's in prison for violence, you know, I know what sort of problem I might have to be looking at. If they say, I got no idea why they do this, they're just not like anyone else in the family, then that's interesting too. Because I would need to know more about the other people in the family and how they're construed. Okay, so just try and have a think before your next new client. Maybe this episode will help you to notice how you get on and how it goes, and also to be more aware of your own explanation of PCP. And you can take Francella's if you like. And I'll see you again at the end of June. Bye!